Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone. I'm your host, Janice Tennell, for today, July 13th. Welcome to Beauty Talk. We're excited about tonight's show. We have photographer Richard Radstone on the line with us tonight. But first, before we get into the conversation with Richard, I just want to remind everyone that the call-in number, if you have comments or if you have a question, the call-in number is 914-803-4399. Again, that number is 914-803-4399. Now I'm going to turn it over to Denise, and she has beauty news.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the Beauty Lounge. Tonight's featured product of the week is the new Revlon ColorStay Gel Envy, the next revolution in nail enamel. It has a flawless salon-quality color with life-resistant wear, revolutionary top coat for long-lasting strength and shine, 30 vibrant, easy-to-remove shades. There are two steps to applying this Total Gel Envy. One is the base and color in one coat, and the second coat is an exclusive diamond top coat. For more information on the Revlon ColorStay Gel Envy, you can go to Revlon.com. Register today for FABAIC, which is the Face and Body Art International Convention, and save $100. The deadline for the early registration is August 1st of August 1st of this year, actually, but the actual FABAIC event takes place May 21st through 24th of 2015 in sunny Fort Lauderdale, Florida, at the Bonaventure Resort and Spa. Again, that's FABAIC, the Face and Body Art International Convention, takes place May 21st through 24th, 2015, in Fort Lauderdale at the Bonaventure Resort and Spa. It's actually 311 days away from today. Next year's theme for the convention is the Orient Express, an art venture. The FABAIC is the one place offering both beginners and seasoned artists a wealth of education, amazing networking opportunities, fun competitions, special events, and so much more. For those of you wondering exactly which type of artist I'm referring to, it's face and body painters. It's face and body painters. For more information, you can check out FABAIC.com. That's F-A-B-A-I-C. Again, F-A-B-A-I-C. That's FABAIC.com. Michael DeVellis and the Powder Group announces the launch of the Powder Group's Pro Shop at TPGProShop.com. The Powder Group Pro Shop features some of the Powder Group's favorite products from more than 30 brands, which include some of my favorites, Z Palette, Stilazzi, Manda Studio, Ket Cosmetics, Senna Cosmetics, the London Brush Company, Alcone, and many more. Again, you can check out the Powder Group Pro Shop at tpgproshop.com. Again, welcome to Beauty Talk, and if you wish to ask a question or make a comment, please do so by calling in to 914-803-4399. Once you're prompted to, you can dial a 1 to speak to us or our lovely guests. Mr. Richard Radstone, and for those of you who may be shy or do not have access to a phone line, you may leave your questions or comments in the Beauty Lounge by joining our Tweet Chat. You can go to tweetchat.com and log on with your Twitter login and join the chat by typing in your comment or your question with using the hashtag #BeautyLounge. If you want to just follow us just from Twitter and not go to tweetchat.com, you can just type in your question or comment as a tweet. And again, you have to use pound Beauty Lounge to be included in our group chat. And I'll turn it back over to you, Janice.
All right. Thank you very much. Again, like I said in the beginning of the show, our guest tonight is photographer Richard Bradshaw. Welcome to the show, Richard.
It's good to be with you. Thanks for having me here.
Oh, you're welcome. Absolutely. Now, Richard, you were a speaker at this year's FAME Expo. And neither one of us got a chance to come hear you speak, so I'm interested in hearing your story tonight. Can you just share with our listening audience a little bit about who you are and what inspired you to become a photographer?
Yeah, absolutely. And thank you for referring to me as a lovely guest. I got to say, it's more of an honor to be here with two quite lovely hosts such as yourself. So I needed to be sure to ground that out there. And it sure is neat to be here with the audience here to share whatever we can share. And regarding FAME, there were a couple things that I went there with. One was an opportunity to just present a short talk to kind of a small intimate group, but we had some nice discussion. And then a master's class with another small group, but again, it was more about activating some of the thoughts we introduced. And I had a booth there as well where I was experimenting with a project I've been working on for quite a few years, which I can share a little bit more about that as the show progresses. And about myself, I'm a working photographer, been shooting for a little bit over 25 years, a lot of advertising, some entertainment work, special emphasis over the past, I'd say, 10 or 15 years in beauty and beauty-related portraiture, and it's grown to become some other things about just getting to know the world around me and people around me, so it's been kind of a full palette of things.
When did you actually become a photographer?
That actually is a great key question, and when I talk, I like to talk about things that sure are self-reflective, and I'm happy to share my career, but a lot of things I really want to interject in just sharing of processes and life experience of myself as an artist and as a person. A lot of it, I think, relates to a lot of things that a lot of us do go through in our development creatively and as people. And for me, I can tie photography, even before I picked up a camera, all the way back to my years in high school, where I graduated with a 1.8 GPA.
And, oh, God. Yeah,
let's just call it semi-tragic.
Please tell that story because, I mean, think about it, especially, I mean, you're talking high school with the 1.8. Think about those people who are in college and they're, you know... They're cutting it close with the GPA and actually graduating, and maybe they're stuck and they're not sure of where to go in their careers. So, I hate that, you know, to know that you had a 1.8, but it's good to hear that, you know, you weren't at the top of your class. It's good to hear that, you know, you didn't have this perfect path.
It's true, and at the top of the class, it depends on which way you tip the grading curve. But what was interesting about it, and I think it applies to a lot of us as creative thinkers, is it was more about where my mind was.
Mm-hmm.
And even at that time, I was a visual person. I didn't read a lot. To this day, I don't read a lot. I write more than I read. But back then, the reason my grade was so low was because if there were 14 tests in the year, I only took two of them because I was ditching and cutting the rest. And you
surprise me, Richard.
Yes, it's kind of a mess inside this head, and the test I did take, I would do well on them. But what was interesting about them is it was based on visual scanning of the material.
Mm-hmm.
And as you were saying before about the college grades, I finished that and I had to look myself in the mirror, as well as the shrugged shoulders of family looking at me going, what are you going to do now? And I went to a junior college. No university would really bring me in unless I paid some sort of double or triple tuition.
Right.
And I ended up pulling close to a 4.0 because I said to myself, I need to apply myself now, and I did, and I did well. But
what was your major?
I just got all the general eds out of the way.
Right.
And then I started to lean towards becoming an optometrist, which was sort of an idea of the family. Well, you know, let's see how he can do on this path. And I followed it. So life and academics and situation kind of dictated the path to study towards. And so then I transferred over to a major university and started ditching again and started acing the one out of five tests, and the whole thing started happening again. And a sense of frustration set in, and I took a photography class as an elective. And then all of a sudden, this huge release came in, and all of that daydreaming and all of that independent thinking and looking at things differently finally had a channel to be expressed through. And it's been that course ever since. And the moral of the story is that listening to inner self, and that's why I take it all the way back to high school, because we all have these points of view as artists, as photographers, as hair, makeup, whatever we do, we all have these points of view. And where is the breaking point in our lives that we finally bring them to the surface and act upon them? And for me, it was photography. And that path is still continuing to develop. But it's interesting when you ask the question, when did you start to become a photographer, which is the craft? I think it started much earlier, even before I realized it.
Right. I think that happens with a lot of us.
Yeah, I do think so. And I know we're live here, but please feel free to prompt me, because I'm the kind of person that can just keep on talking and talking, and I want to be careful to equally yoke out the time for us, for you and any callers as well.
But most of our guests are. Trust me, we stop them when we want to interject something, so you don't feel like you have to stop.
Okay. All right, so if need be, I'll listen to the prompting of the airwave with those
right.
hooks that they bring on the stage.
Right.
Yes.
So, Richard, so you take this photography class, and things, stuff is starting to open up, so to speak. What did your family have to say? And at this point, after you took this photography class, what was your decision? Did you decide, okay, I'm going to continue in this, in the direction of photography, forget everything else? How did it all play out?
Well, first, everyone looked at me with the, "Are you nuts? You're going to starve." Because there's a preconception out there in our craft, and I want to be careful that I don't sound insulting to myself or to anyone working in all these different, amazing, diverse fields of photography and makeup, hair, and all the arts that we do.
Right.
My family had sort of a disillusioned perspective of what photography was based on some photographers that they knew that were doing everything they could to just barely eke out an existence. They'd be photographing smaller events and whatever they could get their hands on, which, again, is part of a business. It's a good thing.
Right.
But, again, they were thinking, well, it's going to be a tough life. And at that point, I took them to a grocery store, and I walked them up all the aisles from cereal to soup to cosmetics. And I asked to do an exploration of how many packaging items do we see that have photography on them, and how many photographs do we see in magazines and publications. And we spent a good week or two doing that, and all of a sudden the eyes opened up, and family support did come in, and in some ways I became sort of the oddball artist of the family, which was always a good thing, and they did stand behind me and rally behind me. I went to school. Before I went to school, I left the college, and I worked two jobs for a year. My father had a produce company, so by day, I delivered produce in Las Vegas, Nevada. I knew the loading docks of Caesar's Palace and the Desert Inn like no one else. and by night, I sold women's shoes.
Wow.
Yeah, it was back in the, I'm dating myself, but in the 80s. So I did all the polyester stuff and the feathered hair. And maybe at that point, I sort of started to get a little bit of an instill in me about an eye for fashion, you know, an eye for, mm-hmm. as funny as it sounds, talking to someone about their shoes or their feelings. You know, it was funny how much psychology even happened there. And I know every hair and makeup person on the phone understands that sort of psychology when they talk with their clients in the chair.
Right.
And being raised with two sisters, I always identified with that sort of feminine side of point of view of the world, I guess, which led to, I think, the beginning stages of applying what I do to beauty and portraiture. Mm-hmm. So I worked those two jobs for a year and then went to school for 3 years. And after that, I started my career. And I'd be glad to elaborate on a few phases of that career, but I'll pause for a second, see if you have any specific thoughts or questions you'd like to share at this point or ask.
Oh, no, keep going. I like
keep,
to
hear.
I actually have a question. Like, what was that transition like once you left the two jobs and then you finished school? What was the transition like of starting your career? Was it hard? Was it easy? What challenges did you face?
You know, I've always thought way ahead,
mm-hmm.
and I plan as heavy as I can, and then I let go of it. That's something I'm learning now after 25 years in this thing, and I'm getting better at learning how to plan and how to be really fluid and to let go. I mean, the stakes are way different now. There's so much more involved, but even
mm-hmm.
back then, when I started school with the thought of the day I graduate and hit the streets, I'm going to hit the streets as a working photographer and not, you know, not an assistant or an emerging photographer, but just really as a working photographer. So I started a business in the last 10 months of my school. And I got a few jobs. I shot some hotels, the El Encanto in Santa Barbara. I did a brochure for them, and I started doing a lot of architecture and real estate work, which kind of led to a foundational side of just getting off the ground.
Mm-hmm.
So the transition was pretty good. The bumps on it were actually with some of the academia, because I started missing some classes again, but for a completely different purpose.
Mm-hmm.
The business block, I missed a lot of that because I was doing business already.
Right.
And it turned into this big debate that they almost weren't going to let me out of school because I didn't know how to start my business, and it became a little goofy, but it all worked out. So
do you think if you had to start all over, like once you finish high school, do you think if you had to do it over now, would you go to college or would you just start your photography career?
You know, it's a fantastic question. I also am an educator. I go around to some of the schools and do some workshops, and I mentor a
mm-hmm.
lot of photographers and now other visual artists. So I've seen a lot of different perspectives come through the door from
mm-hmm.
very expensive institutions with tremendous debt loads
mm-hmm.
to smaller institutions without the cachet
mm-hmm.
to self-taught just out of books and trial and error and School of Hard Knocks.
Mm-hmm.
And in saying that, my advice would be it goes deeper than passion. A lot of us will say passion. Are you passionate about it? Which is true.
Mm-hmm.
That's
mm-hmm.
an external thing that we need to do. A lot will say style, which is true. We
mm-hmm.
all have to establish a certain perspective and look to our work to a certain
right.
degree. But even underneath that, it's about tenacity and purpose. I mean, what is the real reasoning and what is the real driving, even release to the decision to go into a craft like photography or hair and makeup or anything in the arts?
Mm-hmm.
And if the answer is solely for fame and fortune, which can happen, or solely because it's cool and fun, which it is, it might need to be a different re-exploration. A lot of people will say, and I get it, a lot of people will say how much the industry has changed over the years, and it has. And a lot of people will say how budgets are decreased and it's a difficult industry and you have to have your business in check, which is true.
Mm-hmm.
But really, if it's looked at in a really optimistic way, because there is chatter that happens that says, oh, don't do this, it's terrible, look how hard it is, it's nothing like it used to be. But how does the person who's saying, but I don't care, that's what I really want to do, that's what I wake up in the morning going, I love this, this is why I'm here, i.e., you know, the 1.8, the daydreamers, the passionate people in the world who are saying, you know, I don't care, this is what I want to do. If you have that, I don't think we can be discouraged from following it. I think we really, really have to. But the thing we have to do is do it with a real optimistic but realistic way, is to plan out your business plans and your contingencies and how long it's going to take to get yourself going. And it's a bizarre industry because it's a service-based industry.
Right.
And a lot of people will look at metrics and business plans and all the stuff we need to do, which, again, we do. But I think we have to have a degree of emotional flexibility. And these two words sound really funny together, but really humble and long-suffering tenacity. So if those things are in place, I say completely go for it, but be sure that it's in check as you jump in.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think humility is key. It's key,
yeah.
Especially if you plan to be in whatever your business is for a long time.
Yep. And with that all in place, it truly does start to become fun because you're grounded.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
You know, and I know I was just standing on sort of the academic lecturer's platform of that whole long description.
Mm-hmm.
but the real payoff is it's really a neat place to be. There's so much personal, artistic, even spiritual freedom in it. As
mm-hmm.
we start to figure it out and move forward.
So let me ask you this. Who are some of the photographers that you admire and why? And then how important is it for you to be inspired by someone or something?
Well, the two photographers that truly, truly have stuck with me through the years, and you know, it's easy to get caught into the trends and go, okay, this is my photographer of the month or year or my comparison
mm-hmm.
photographer, however we look at those out there working. But I'd really have to say number one would be Irving Penn because of the soulful simplicity of his beauty and his portraiture. I mean, you look at the work, and you have to really look at how it was shot. You know, a lot of large format work, you know, one sheet at a time and big cameras. And you look into the eyes of his subjects or the body language of his subjects, and sure, all the styling's perfect, the lighting's perfect. I mean, he had a flavor that was just unbelievable. But even beyond that, when you really look into the eyes and see the soulfulness of what was pulled out of those portraits, it's amazing. So I try to model as much of that in my life as I can. And it goes deeper than just craft, which, again, I can elaborate on. And the second would be Albert Watson, who's so honest. When you look at what Albert Watson shoots, and he shoots everything. I mean, you can't even classify him, you know, into a full group. I mean, he shoots fashion. A lot of people call him fashion. He shoots portraiture. He shoots fine art. He directs. But when you really look at his work, and some of it is highly produced, and some of it is spontaneous as all heck, but when you look at it, you can just identify with a point of view, just an honesty. It's almost like you've been brought into Albert Watson's head and you're peering out through his eyes, which is really remarkable. So those two, one no longer on the earth with us, one still with us, are two of my favorites.
That's Irving Penn, who is no longer with us.
Yes. Yeah, and if Albert's listening, I apologize. I have no death wish for you. And what the second part of the question is, how important is it to be inspired?
Yeah, how important is it for you to be inspired by someone or something?
It's all important. Although the more and more I go forward in this whole craft, and I work with a lot of people. I mean, a lot of mine is based into this whole capturing of emotion and applying it to a category, if you will. Category, I mean, I do beauty work, I do portraiture, I do advertising. They all have their categories. And even talked about that example of Albert Watson is, I think our goal as artists, my goal as an artist, is to figure out a way to let go and be honest and to be able to shoot something that is inspired from within in a way. But I've been studying a few things lately about just the origins of art, and there was a statement that I can't even find the original origins of it. I took it all the way back and studied all the way back to Aristotle, and it goes before him. And it's this whole idea of art does imitate life. And for me, my goal is to capture an emotion or to do something soulful with my work. And the more I get into the way I work, and it's always been this way, especially as the beauty and portraiture evolved, it's about really breaking down walls and barriers. There's a fourth wall that happens between people as they converse with each other. And you throw a camera or a lens or you put another veil of makeup on a face. And all these things we do to kind of, in a way, manipulate and cover up or modify or redirect something that's coming from within a person.
Mm-hmm.
Or do we find the right ways to channel the right choices on the stuff that's outside to allow that person or that character or that idea to come through? And to get there, the greatest inspiration for me, I'm starting to see this more and more every day, is it's literally, as much as you hear me talking here, it's to slow down and to just listen and to ask questions and to look, and words like empathy and truly, truly, truly doing the best I can to break down that fourth wall, to allow someone else to be comfortable in front of the camera and to allow myself to be as comfortable as well. So the real inspiration to me, it's not so much tear sheets and looking at works of others. It's the spontaneous, in-the-moment interactions between myself and my fellow human around me. And it's amazing. The more I start to let go of that, the more my personal point of view starts to open up in the most remarkable, funky ways. And so that's the new path that, selfishly, I'm on here. And I encourage as many people as I can to jump on the same path because it's really refreshing.
So let me ask you, you recently spoke at Fame Expo. Can you share with us a little bit about what you shared with that audience?
Yeah. I mean, some of it is what we've shared so far.
Mm-hmm.
And I call it point of view. And I call it owning our own perspectives and, again, listening to the world around us. And I call it letting go of this hunger for style or trend or duplication or rifling through the tear sheets and rifling through other people's work. We need to stay current. We need to stay contemporary. We need to know what's going on out there. But again, it's this whole thing, are we really listening to ourselves? And are we really channeling what we hear and see and do and the input we have from, again, the people in the world around us, are we allowing that into our mind and we're allowing that to percolate? And we're allowing ourselves to listen to those first impressions, or even, and this is the tricky part, we're all emotional beings, are we really finding the right way to let those experiences trigger an emotional inner reaction, and can we channel that emotional inner reaction into a visual way? You know, could it be, and I know this sounds really bizarre, and I hope some of us are identifying with it, because that's what's so funny about us as artists is we're all nuts. And, And it's great. And then the other side of our insanity is we're also so cognitive. I mean, we talk about people who are so conflicted on both lobes of the brain 24/7. I don't know why we're not all institutionalized in creative conclave somewhere. But what's so funky about the statement is, okay, so how do we interpret that emotional self into a color palette for hair and makeup? You know, how do we take that and interpret it into our point of view, how a hairstyle should be done? You know, how do I incorporate that into a personal point of view of how I set up my lighting or my background or work with the stylists, or even down to the moment of what I say to everybody, or how do we click the shutter at just that time where that whole emotional thing comes through that could have been prompted by an experience that isn't even what's in front of the camera, but it's still interpreted through our own emotional point of view. Does that make sense, or is it too deep to grab into? Because I share this, and sometimes I get nods and smiles, and sometimes I get dry stares going, you know, Zen Master, that's great, but what do we do with that?
Well, I know Sharon Tina Brightman just said on Twitter that you just described artists in general perfectly. So somebody's following you out there.
Okay.
So maybe you're not going too deep.
Okay. And I'm sorry, what was that name again?
Sharon Tina Brightman.
Hey Sharon Tina, thanks for the comment. Good to meet you. But what's really interesting about it is it starts to transcend even passion, and I totally buy into passion. I do. Passion and vision and all these thoughts and words that we go after as creatives, they're great words, and they're great acts. I mean, nothing feels better than to stand up and cry passionately for a point of view we believe in and see and produce and work on for years and years and years. I mean, the passion is really a truthful thing. But there's also a double-edged sword in passion, because passion really works when you're producing and on the path and everything's kind of going in the right direction. And what's funky as an artist is we really dig the acceptance, and sometimes we thrive on the rejection in some ways. But there's also other times where if we're not getting the feedback back, the passion goes away and we find ourselves numbed. Mm-hmm. So really, the deeper quest, and I think it shows itself in the passionate things we do, but it's to really come from a point of view of purpose. And for all of us, purpose can be something different. I mean, some of it, there's a real spiritual purpose. There's healing purposes. There's purposes from people that are more tactile in a thing or a color or who knows what. I mean, it's so individual, I can't define it. But if we spend the time to really dig into that, even sidebar to what our craft is, and then find that little thing and hang on to it tenaciously and be humble and let it adapt and let it grow and let it mature and let it be influenced by the world around us and let go of the comparisons and let go of the quest for style, but rather for that exploration of finding that inner purpose, what's so amazing about it is style does start to evolve. And I think some mornings we wake up and we don't wake up passionate, but we still wake up grounded and enthusiastic and happy to go forward. And people look at us and go, how can you stay so passionate about this thing? And we're not even thinking passion. We're thinking, well, it's just why I'm here. It's this reason I wake up in the morning to do what I do.
Mm-hmm.
And it becomes self-perpetuating and long-lasting. I think it's really, really an important point of view on where, as artists, do we seek our inspiration? And where, as artists, do we draw our line on being overly influenced by even some of the feedback coming back from us, grounded in these thoughts of I keep using the word, but, you know, this sort of in-the-moment passion. I mean, we've all walked away from an experience that was just a great, uplifting experience. That's awesome. Mm-hmm. And I pray and hope that all of us have more and more of those. But that's almost becomes, after a while, the drug of choice. And we have to be really careful that we don't get lost in those experiences, too, because they can also drift us off purpose. And I can definitely share some experience of that from some career path here that it's taken me a lot of years to finally ground in that place. And it's a scary place, but it's also a really, really uplifting and edifying place as well.
Wow.
Now, what's your... I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
I was going to ask, what's your most important work to date, and why do you feel it's important? Like, why is it important to you?
Yeah, I mean, that would absolutely, positively, without the shadow of a doubt, be my mm-hmm. Operation 365 work, mm-hmm. which has been now starting to apex. It's going into past its third year. And
now,
go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, explain to our audience what that project is.
September 9th, 2011, just based on a whole set of situation. And when I talk in a group, I start this whole presentation with one slide that says, after an abnormally terrible day, and it was an abnormally terrible day. I mean, we all have those. I mean, everything in life was on stake for this one day, both art, craft, career, relocation of family, all kinds of things were leaning on this day, and it didn't play out right. And I was left completely numbed by the experience. And I'm traveling back to the airport, and the driver of the car, this quiet guy who's just staring ahead, and I'm in the back of the car, just slumped up in the seat, you know, sucking back into it, almost like there's G forces pushing me back into it, which is just kind of my own body language. And mm-hmm. I look at him and I go, you know, I'm thinking, I got to talk to somebody right now. I got to get out of my own self. Whoa, whoa, whoa. And I ask him his name. And he tells me his name in one syllable. And I go, well, that was deep. And he's speaking in a very heavy dialect, Russian. And I go, do you have any hobbies? And he says, music. And I think, all right, maybe it's a start. Let's dig a little bit deeper. And I go, what kind of music? He squares me up in the mirror, does a couple of those, you know, eye glances at me, and he goes, guitar music. I'm going, well, okay, the story's kind of connecting. And I go, music about what? And there's nothing, just dead silence other than just checking me in the mirror. And that lasts about 20 minutes. And I'm thinking, okay, let's just sit here and lick my wounds. And, you know, you're obviously carrying all this after an abnormally terrible day energy, and the world sees it, and just enjoy it to its best right now because, you know, life's not so good. And we get outside the airport. This is in Pennsylvania. And outside the airport, and this is during some of the peak of recession, there's this whole area, industrial buildings, and this perfect wide black paved brand new street, and crickets, not a soul there because the buildings aren't occupied because, again, the economy's so bad. And he pulls in there, and he starts driving down there, and he's still eyeballing me. And I'm thinking, this is perfect. This is the perfect ending to an abnormally terrible day. And I'm starting to review, is my life insurance in check? Because I'm thinking, you know, my friend here is going to drive to the end of the alley and pretty much pulverize me for getting in his life. Yeah, so I become very situationally aware, very, very repentant for what I just did to my family. And he stops, and he leans over the back seat, and he looks at me. He eyeballs my camera bag, looks back at me. I'm thinking, okay, he's going to take the camera bag as well. He's seeing value here now. And he goes, music about friends. Would you like to take my picture? Yeah, and all of a sudden I'm sitting up in the seat and the light is lifted off my chest. I mean, the weight is lifted off my chest, and I'm going, man, the whole day disappeared. And I end up getting in the conversation with him, and he starts telling me about his whole life, moving here in 1961 with nothing from the Ukraine, brought his family over, got a job driving taxis, realized he loved people, started doing airport limos, and he's been there the whole time. He's put his two sons through school. And he's talking about their engineering career and you know, of one of them and all that they do. And I take his picture, and I get on the plane, and the situation happens where I could kind of put some pretty bad juju on somebody sitting across the aisle from me because of what they were doing. And I decided to look at the situation differently, and I realized there were two sides to the story, and I chose the positive side of the story, which to this day I really feel and believe was the truth. And again, that whole feeling changed for the positive. And that day forward, I decided to get out of my own head and start meeting absolute strangers no matter where I was. So for a full year, every single day, I approached absolute strangers, took their picture, grew into some questions, and every single day I posted a blog entry and their pictures. And I finished the whole thing. And the whole year I did that, I completely neglected my business, and I just went for this whole purpose, soulful side of where I apply my craft. And what was so crazy about it is my phone started ringing on my assignment work, and at the end of the year, I billed $5.35 more than the offer I just got beat up to not get. And I finished the project, and now I'm 3 years into it. I haven't stopped. It turned into an organization, and I'm still moving forward. And I still interview strangers in video and still pictures just about every day. And it's opened up now for people around the planet to start contributing their stories and their content to it. And it's growing into this whole outreach about getting a whole group of people around the planet to just look at each other and listen to each other. And realize that we are all dramatically different, and that's way okay. We don't have to be best friends or anything, but we surely can pass on the dignity to each other as we should. And the wildest thing about it is changing that perspective has completely influenced my beauty work, and it's going into this whole new chapter. And every morning I wake up now, I pretty much shoot every day. If it's not a stranger, it's a beauty test, or if it's not either of those, it's a portrait, or it's an assignment that's come in. And the culture of my sets has changed. The simplicity of the approach has changed. The work just keeps getting better and better and better.
I was just going to say, I've heard you earlier, Richard, talk a lot. I keep hearing you say a lot about point of view and owning your own perspective and listening. And so would you say that's one of the main focuses of the 365 project?
At first, selfishly, yes. And then it's still a resounding yes for self. But what's so neat about it is it's starting to become this infectious thing that I'm starting to see other people, because comments and other content comes in through it too, that are slowly starting to subscribe into this whole point of view too. So, yeah, and that's part of the payoff too. You know, we talk about as artists, because I know we all want to have our work seen and heard and be recognized and be appreciated for what we do. But it just poses the question for all of us, for our self-reflection, and also for our savvy on how we. Because we have to market ourselves. We have to, I mean, it's a world where we have to be able to financially support ourselves. But
right.
it changed the scales a little bit. If you look at a scale, on one side is completely aesthetic and the other side is completely economic, there's always this equation about, okay, who's the starving artist and who's doing purely commercial work and who's frustrated in between that whole scale as it slides up and down on both sides. But what if the triangle in the center is more grounded? And then what's so neat is all of a sudden it starts to radiate out to both sides of that scale. It radiates into the economic side of the commercial work we do, and it radiates into the artistic side of what we do. And I know I'm trying to explain a visual, but if that scale was 7 feet long and there were equally weighted cubes on both sides and there was all that distance between the two, all of a sudden what happens is X month, X week, X year, X amount of time that we hang on to that tenacity I was talking about sooner and that humble tenacity that we talked about sooner earlier, the 7 feet teeter-totter turns into a 6 feet teeter-totter, and then it turns into a 4 foot, and then a 3 foot, and then a 2 foot. You know, and I mean, the nirvana would be all of a sudden if you just had one square sitting on top of that triangle balance that was all aesthetic and economic, which would be the nirvana. I don't know how many of us are there or not, but it's grounded in this place about this whole personal point of view and what really, really inspires us as artists. For me, it's this whole listening to the world around me. And for me, it's this whole doing all I can to emotionally connect or empathize with everybody I work with, and even on top of it, everybody I meet in life. Because for me, that influences that moment where we have to deal with emotion and recall emotion on set and recognize emotion on set. And really, in my beauty work, it's all about emotion. Mm-hmm. So that 365 thing, I'm passionate about it, but it comes from more of a purpose point of view that serves a community and serves other people. But in doing that, I know it sounds really, really Gandhi-esque, but in doing that, it selfishly serves myself, too, to better my craft. And
absolutely.
How cool is that?
Absolutely. Now, is there any direction different than where it's going already? Is there any other direction that you would love to see Project C365 go in?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, there's a statement in it, and it's actually becoming a fairly active hashtag, and that's the power of one. And what that means is the power of one is remarkable. And the idea behind it is every day of every year, our individual impact truly matters to someone else, someone in the world, and, you know, somewhere, somehow. Literally, the people we walk past on the streets is our perspective, just the way we walk, the way we talk, the way we look at each other, the way we take a moment away from our mobile devices, which are wonderful. They connect us, but they also segregate us. You know, that we raise our chins and look at each other. And it transcends this whole idea of paying it forward, which is a great thing. But it turns into this aspect of living it forward. And in that idea is to continue to grow Operation 365. It's already getting a more and more vibrant subscription base and viewer base every single day.
Mm-hmm.
And sure, again, selfishly, the more viewers that come in, the more visibility the whole project has. Absolutely, I won't hide that. But more importantly, is the more people that start to subscribe to it and take part in, there's ways anyone anywhere in the world can contribute to it. They can answer two of the original questions that are part of this whole project and answer those questions and send in a picture. They can send in, and this has been done, but in this medium it's really, really cool. They can send in the picture of themselves holding onto a word. And I've got those coming in from all around the world. So we start looking at people in all these different cultures sharing words. They can take pictures around where they live to show this whole community this amazing diversity of what's out there in the world, and it all becomes incredibly inspirational. And now there's ways to contribute content and articles and pictures. It's just becoming very interactive. So the more people that subscribe to it or comment on it or contribute to any of the challenges, what it says is, you know what, around the globe, there's more and more people that are realizing that, again, every day of every year, our individual impact truly matters to someone in the world. So if this whole group of I'm sorry, numbers, you know, right now it's in the less than 2,000s, but if it becomes 10,000 or 100,000, what it's saying is, you know what, there's 100,000 people out there that in their own circle of influence are doing the best they can to live it forward. And how cool would that be? And that's the ultimate goal. And there'll be other things that are going to be introduced over the years, some new mm-hmm. tools and some new ways to do it. But that's why we're doing this. It's about the power within each of us to really impact the world around us in the most amazing way. And as commercial artists or visual artists or editorial artists or entertainment artists or advertising artists, that point of view can even be taken into the cultures we work within. And the more we own that, the more we find ourselves freed up to really feel right about what we're doing. So it becomes very infectious.
And some of the people that are subscribing, have you found that they're just everyday people, or do you have a lot of artists who are subscribing and submitting work, or is it a mix of both?
It's across the board. I mean, I call this the silent majority, mm-hmm. which is everyday people living everyday lives, doing the best we can to move forward. And mm-hmm. by everyday, I'm not talking about struggling, mundane, or any words like that, which some of us are. I mean, I definitely mm-hmm. have my mundane, struggling moments, and I'm not
right.
I'm not segregating, saying, or if you're highly visible, I'm not saying you're not an everyday person as well. But what I'm saying is people that are just really being willing to let go of all pretenses and realize that all of our situations are different, and are we really looking at each other? So the group coming through, I don't know. I mean, the subscribers, I try to keep up and look at who they are and check out their profiles, but it's daunting. But it's across the board. And 80% of it is domestic, and 20% of it is global. And same thing with the comments. I mean, there's been comment discussions, and it's not so much like messaging on Facebook or anything, but it's just, you know, I keep the comment open forum. And there's been some backwards and forward comment discussions that have happened between myself and people in India. I mean, I can truly say I feel like I have friends around the globe now, and people mm-hmm. are seeing each other and listening to each other. And it's dynamically diverse, and it is all of us. And that's what's so fascinating about it.
Wow. Now, this 365 project, every single day you are meeting someone new. What is it like approaching an absolute stranger, like on the street, let's say, and how does it work? Do you just, you know, you go up to a stranger and say, hey, I want to take a photograph, and can I interview you? Or is it something where you meet a stranger, let's say in a coffee shop or somewhere, and then you just start having a conversation, and then it turns into, you know, can I take your picture, and can you answer some questions? How does it all work?
Well, I paint myself metallic silver, and I sing loudly in a monotone voice 1940 show tunes. And I'm kidding on that, but I'm going to do a shameless plug on that first, and then I'll answer how it affects me. But on the operation-365.org website, there's a little icon button on the side that says the Power of One Challenge, and I'm inviting everybody around the globe to try it. And if you click on that, it gives a little bit of a suggestion on how, and then it gives a really easy way to report the experience back to all of us so we can all see how it kind of affects everybody. You know, there's little buttons that says, how did I feel before I went? How did I feel after I went? If they choose, mm-hmm. you can put in a sentence on how it went, or a paragraph, or a picture, but you can put as little as or as much as you want to put into it. And that'll be published openly, those experiences, on the Operation 365, so we can all kind of answer that one together, too, which is really empowering. For me, it's random. And a lot of times it's kind of scary and frightening, and a lot of times it just happens relaxed. I mean, I just look at people and smile. You know, who's the goofy guy smiling over there? You know, Most people appreciate at least that, you know. Or I've learned to say things like "good day," you know, because I've learned that "hello" and "how are you" and "what's up" is almost more engaging. It's like, "Who are you? I'm not going to tell you what's up," but you know, a good day, at least for me, usually works. And I do get some crazy rejections, but the majority are willing to at least nod back.
Mm-hmm.
And if someone comes up to me and talks, I'll definitely engage in conversation. If I'm standing in the line anywhere, some of you probably will love me, or some of you probably hate this guy who sits next to you and just kind of smiles at you and says something like, "Nice purse," you know. And just if the response is positive, I'll just start talking. There's times my family laughs because I have this 50-pound backpack that has video and camera and tape recorders and all kinds of stuff in it that I put on my back, and I tell everyone I'm going 365-ing. So here comes the prospector walking down the sidewalk with camera bag, carrying tripods, saying hey to the world. And some days people right off the bat will say, "Cool, it sounds great." And I've had days where I've wandered around aimlessly for like 8 hours thinking, "Man, is my breath that bad today?" And finally someone will accept it, you know. So the experience is pretty much every emotion. I mean, some days I wake up having a good day, feeling more courageous. Some days I wake up frustrated, tired, and exhausted or frightened or whatever negative feeling motivates me. But the one thing I can absolutely say is every single time I've gotten into a conversation with somebody, and I hope all of us have had this experience, every single time I've gotten this conversation with this person I don't even know, the worries of everything goes away. And all of a sudden I'm relaxed and clear again. And I've learned something new. So it's a definite, you know, I'll use the word passion or love or whatever, it's definitely this roller coaster of I got to get up and go and do it. And
right. And what kind of impact do you think that has on the world, this whole project?
It's an incredibly hard answer. To be too bold on it.
Mm-hmm.
Starts to feel so self-grandiosing. Although I know I'm in a world where I have to speak and promote, and I believe in this message. I'm now trying, and I do, get to universities or wherever I can to share this message. And I thank you for letting me share this whole thing on your show. And again, I am a beauty shooter, and this does affect my beauty work in the most amazing, profound way. But we're transcending something other than that right now and even talking about that. And I mean, I have a dream for it. I have a dream for this community to continue to grow. And I get all kinds of positive comments back at it, more positive than negative. I mean, everyone I talk to about it says, "No, you got to keep doing this thing. It really, really matters." And I do, and I'm following it, and I'm pressing it. And I do on the occasion get people that look at me and go, "This is the stupidest thing I've ever heard about." But the majority aren't saying that. And I could go down a list. I mean, there's close to 700 comments back in from strangers around the planet who have positively commented to this. And I speak to so many people face-to-face that say, "You know what, this is a really good thing. You've got to not stop this. You've got to keep it going." So I have a dream for what it needs to be. And I have a certain confidence and tenacity to hang on to it, to make that happen, because I know I'm at the helm steering this thing forward, and I feel responsible for it. And I feel it's growing. You know, am I on the networks? Am I in the huge network of broadcasters everywhere? No, but every day it gets a little bit broader. So we'll just follow it and hopefully, I say it's we, you know, I guess I'm the captain, but I really hope we can turn this thing into what it needs to turn into.
Absolutely.
It's a good thing.
I feel like I've heard some of the answers, but what is beauty to you?
It really comes from within, you know, and it's really interpretive in a way, and you're right, some of the answers have been put out there, and I've expressed how it's influenced me, and it does become a collaboration. I mean, first, it's coming from within in two ways, within your subject, okay? Then it comes from within yourself, and then it becomes within each of you, how do you connect with each other? And it's even before you start to apply anything. You know, and yeah, I go and I have a certain set of tools I use in my craft, and they're adaptable. But and yes, they're semi-locked because you have to be semi-locked when you're setting something up. You know, you need to make everyone comfortable. And if you're spending hours and hours just doing the basic work you need to do to start your craft, someone you're already losing interest. But that's part of being prepared. And then beauty really comes from a heartfelt place. I mean, it even starts from the first hello. It starts the second they sit in stylist chair. You know, and it starts the second the relationship starts between myself as a photographer and a director and the stylist team. And then comes in the talent or the subject, and then they get brought into this whole thing. And the whole thing is a reflection of this, as Irving Penn's example, this, and as I see his work, this soulful place, you know, this place of trust, this place of it's okay, let's explore, let's see how we feel here. And then it even gets to a point where it transcends fad and technique, and I know it's important we have to pull out our palette sheets and our tear sheets. We put them all over the walls and the mirrors, and we go, okay, do we like this look? Do we like that look? Is it edgy? Is it soft? Is it smoky eyes? I mean, all these words we use all the time and all these references we put in front of us, which we need to, but there needs to be a point to where we also just check it completely and we get back to that soulful place. And then it becomes amazingly organic, and all of a sudden, all the stuff falls into place. I mean, stylist is going, man, you know, I love what I just applied. You know, I love that it's soft and invisible because it just works. This person is just totally carrying it, and it works. You know, or I love how heavy and smoky and contoured and crazy it is because it completely works. And I'm buying into it. I mean, we've all had those experiences when we look at our subject, and you just see it in their eyes. They're going, I feel like I'm entombed of all the stuff you put on my face. And then we put them in the set, and it goes away again.
Mm-hmm.
Goes, you know, further into the hole. You know, so it just becomes this whole individual and honest thing of no, I see, hear, empathize with the whole tone and mood we're going after here. And it becomes invisible, you know. It just does. I mean, under the lightest concept or hair or makeup, or under the heaviest concept or hair or makeup, all of a sudden it becomes completely invisible, and you just buy it. It's real, and you look into the person's eyes, and in their eyes, they're connected, and they're in the moment, and it happens really quickly, and it's an amazing rush, and That's the whole art of beauty to me. You know, beauty isn't painted on. Beauty is drawn out. And then all the paint tools we use are just the tools. But you can't paint something that's internal. You have to allow it to come out. You have to see it and understand it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Richard, it has been an absolute pleasure
back with you guys too. I know we all had some chances to drink a lot of water or whatever it is we're drinking as I continue to pontificate. But it's funny. I've had some people, some friends of mine, that look at my blog and they go, "Hey, Richard, every once in a while, can you use some smaller words?" And I don't know, I just have fun with words now, too.
I am really looking forward to getting back to your blog and checking out some of the stories, just learning a little bit more about some of the people you've come into contact with. But it's been an absolute pleasure. And I'm sure we're going to have you back on the show a little down the road. This project is going somewhere.
Yeah, any time, absolutely. Nothing more sweet than to speak with I call us all new friends, and it's just an amazing thing. And last quick thought of anybody going into the website, even yourself, since it's overwhelming on content, and some of it, mm-hmm. a lot of it, you even just see some of the journey that myself as an artist has gone through. And I made myself pretty transparent that way, because I figured that was the integrity part I have to do on this. So towards the beginning, if anyone starts at the beginning, I ask for upfront forgiveness on misspellings and punctuation. I'm learning.
We forgive you.
Oh, thank you so much.
Well, thanks again, Richard.
You're so welcome. I was going to say, but you've already said it. Is there anything I can ever do for yourself or any of the audience if they want to comment or ask any questions? I'm absolutely available.
Oh, absolutely. That would be great. That would be great. And I'm also interested in looking at some of your portraiture work.
Yes.
We can find that on your website?
Yeah, there's two websites. There's Operation-365.org, and then my personal website is richardradstone.com. And then everything connects backwards and forwards from there.
Yeah. All right. Any last words to me before we leave?
Thank you for having me on. Thank you, listeners, for being with us. And I wish your show and every aspect of every project or every dream that everybody listening has comes to fruition, and that we all just stay on this path of moving forward, loving each other, respecting each other, and doing the art that we do. Because artists, I think all of us are uniquely, wonderfully conflicted people that need to continue to move forward, because art does imitate life, and everything that we do really does impact the world around us now, and also just the longevity of what we create and what we put out there. What's so cool about it, with all this new media and however it's published, it really does stay in front of people for a long time, and how cool is that? So chin up and eyes open to the world for all of us. Move forward with purpose, joy, and happiness.
Yes. Better. Thank you so much.
I feel like a minister after saying that.
Well, we're all ministers in one way or another.
That's true.
And thank you all again for joining tonight's show. And you can follow us. You can follow Beauty Talk on Twitter at @beauty_talk, on Instagram @beauty_talk_media. On Facebook, we're Beauty Talk Online Radio. And on BBM, our PIN information is C002EB072. All right. Sounds good. So, everybody, again, go check out Richard's work on the website, and we'll post them out on the tweet chat and on the Beauty Talk Facebook page as well. His website, you can go out, check out his work, and check out what this Operation 365 is all about. And again, follow us on our social media sites. And until next week, everybody have a beautiful and blessed week. Good night, everybody. Thank you again, Richard.
Good night.
Good night. Thank you.
And you can check out this episode in about 10 minutes on the website, on the blogtalkradio.com / Beauty Talk with Illusions.
Good night.
Good night.
Good night.